Welcome, this is Brian from Brian's Spain Domain, and we are here with Spanish History 101, Episode 4. In the previous episode, we talked about the situation in Spain during the pre-Roman period, and we mentioned that despite the fact history books traditionally explain that the Iberian Peninsula was divided into three groups of people, the Celts, the Iberians, and the Celtic Iberians, in reality, the situation was a little more complex. We also stressed that this is a period in history that is under continuous review and revision, and that the academic jury is still out regarding a lot of major issues, such as where many of these people came from, who they were, their origins, when they came, what their language was, where they lived, to name just a few. And we also said that it was an age where the facts were still a little sketchy in many areas. Scholars over the past 40 years have come a long way in understanding what was really going on back then. We're talking about pretty much the first 1,000 years BCE, or the first millennium BCE, and it's both a fascinating and laborious task because there's a lot out there, but at the same time, there are still a lot of enigmas. In any event, in recent years, we have focused their efforts on three different disciplines: linguistics, archaeology, and genetics. This last field is obviously the youngest and the most recent, but it has progressed at rocket speed and has shed a lot of new light on some previously unknown facts. In the last podcast, we started off by talking about the presence of the Celtic tribes. Their presence was both vast and important. They lived in mainly the north, northwest, and western part of the Iberian Peninsula. Today, we are going to move on and talk about the Iberians, as well as about two other areas where there were people who might have come from a different origin. And with that, we will wrap up the pre-Roman cultures. The Iberians were a group of peoples who inhabited mainly the Mediterranean coast and inland. They are generally considered to be a pre-Indo-European culture. The words Iberia and Iberians both come from Greek. Nowadays, the general consensus is that they didn't refer to any specific place. But one thing is for sure, there seems to be a relationship between Iberia and the river Ebro, which is the second longest river in Spain. Now, even though we refer to the Iberians as a unit, they themselves apparently didn't do the same. Nor did anyone really. Nowadays, historians who specialize in this subject never really look at the Iberians as a unified ethnic group. There were tons of tribes, and some of them are famous in Spanish history, such as the Edetani, the Bastetani, the Turdetani, and the Oretani, and many more. They probably don't sound familiar to you. They'll probably sound more like dishes on an Italian menu, but that's all right. Now you know them. So even though they weren't really united, they did have certain features in common that we will look at now. One of those things was a common language family, which apparently was not Indo-European. It was something more like pre-Indo-European. They didn't all speak the same language, but they were from the same language family. Apparently, there were two major branches. One was from the northeast and the other from the south. There has also been efforts to find a relationship between these languages and Aquitanian. The Aquitanian language is considered to be sort of a proto-language or a proto-tongue of Basque. But once again, nothing is definite there. Linguists have tried to decode the Iberian language, but so far to no avail. They have been able to basically figure out the phonetics, that is, they can read the words, but they don't really know what they mean. And I can totally relate to that because that's how I felt when I went to Finland. I could read the words all right, but I had no idea what they were saying. A sign next to a store door could just as easily be saying help wanted as beware of dogs. So it was quite frustrating, and I know where they're coming from. So the fact that we can't really understand what their written legacy was telling us has made learning somewhat complicated, but archaeologists are good at sussing out these problems in other ways, namely through architecture, analyzing pottery, tools, funeral remains, to name a few. And of course, there is the literature from that time from sources that we do understand. Anyway, this is what we know, or at least think we know, so far. Where did the Iberians come from? Well, there, my friends, is just one of the many mysteries I was telling you about. This may be because there may be more than one origin. As I mentioned before, based on the language, it is pretty much agreed that they were pre-Indo-European, but when they appeared or how they came is another story. Some say they actually were there the whole time. Others say they may have arrived from from North Africa. But the prevailing theory these days is that they were actually originally from Northern Europe. And the reason why they believe this is because they incinerated their dead and put them in urns and then buried those urns in fields. This is a Bronze Age culture known as the urn field culture, and it was from that part of Europe. This type of burial procedure is more evident in the northeastern part of Spain, but not really in the rest, which makes some scholars think that there may have been a mix of cultures at that time. When did they arrive? That's another good question. Several theories suggest a wide range of eras, from the late Neolithic period, somewhere between the 5th and 3rd millennium BCE, all the way to 900 BCE. But once again, no one really knows for sure. The Iberians, it would seem, were a fairly basic culture, who benefited greatly from their strategic location along the Mediterranean, as they would be the first to come into contact with civilizations from the eastern part of the Mediterranean, the Phoenicians and the Greeks mainly, and then later the Carthaginians and eventually the Romans. As a result of this contact, there would be a period of rapid progress starting around the 7th century BCE until nearly the end of the millennium. And it's during this stage that we have some of the finest examples of Iberian culture. Where did they live? Where did they settle? Well, for the most part, they stayed close together in towns and fortresses, and they also had some cities. By cities, we're talking maybe 1,000 people, known as oppidums or oppida. Some of these were pretty highly developed towns with streets and small squares and a decent urban layout, so they advanced quite a bit there. Their society, like most, had its different levels of classes. Military leaders were generally the rulers, and at the bottom you would find the poorest ranks of society and slaves if they had any. They also were into agriculture. They grew grains, olives, and wine grapes, bread, olive oil, and wine, the holy trinity of the Mediterranean diet. Wine grapes are said to have been an import from the Phoenicians, and they were enormously popular, as you can imagine. And olive trees were very important too. In this sense, this age was extremely important to the history of this country, especially if you consider that Spain today is, for example, the biggest producer of olive oil in the world. It produces 50%, no less. Places like the province of Jaén, for example, is just one giant olive grove. And if you've been there, you know what I mean. The Iberians were fond of warfare. They engaged in it both in the defense of their territories as well as in the defense of others. They were hired as mercenaries for both the Carthaginians and later on for the Romans. And we'll get to that at a different time. The Iberians specialized in cavalry and as foot soldiers. Their weapon of choice was a special kind of sword known as a falcata. Probably this invention wasn't theirs. It probably came from the Greeks because they have a similar looking version known as the kopi. But the Iberians turned it into an art form, and the falcatas were highly prized. Hannibal was so impressed that he actually equipped his army with them. And while I'm no collector of knives, I have to admit that the falcata is a very cool looking sword. Iberian art. The Iberians have left us with plenty of examples of pottery and ceramics, quite decorative and beautiful, but they also produce some of Spain's finest art, jewelry, and sculptures. The most famous example is the Lady of Elche, a large bust of a woman wearing an elaborate headdress which looks like sort of a wheel on each side and a fancy necklace. The features on her face suggest a clear Greek influence. Today, the consensus is that it was part of a funeral urn. Influence and inspiration for many of these works came as a result of their coming into contact with other Mediterranean cultures. Other works include The Lady of Baza, or The Beast of Balazote, which is sort of this kind of chimera-like creature, which almost looks like it came from Mesopotamia. And another famous statue was the Lady of Guadamar. As I was saying, these are amazing works of art and they show a clear influence from the Greeks, Phoenicians, and even the Hittite and Syrian cultures. This influence has come to be known as the Orientalization of Iberia. So if you've ever seen an example of Iberian art and you think it sort of reminds you of Babylonia, well, now you know why that may be. Anyway, so this in part is the legacy the Iberians have left with us. They are well worth taking a closer look at. And if you're lucky enough and you live in Madrid, or if you're visiting Madrid, I recommend you go to the Museum of Archaeology. In Spanish, it's abbreviated as MAN, M-A-N. It is one of my favorite museums in Spain and a great way to become acquainted with the earliest ages and stages of Spanish history. We will talk more about the relationship between the Iberians and other civilizations that arrived and interacted with them in a later episode. But let's check out a couple of other cultures. Tartessos. In the southern, southwestern part of Spain, legend has it there was a great civilization that based its wealth and fame on gold and silver, and for a brief period of time was one of the richest civilizations in all the Mediterranean. What part of Spain are we talking about? Traditionally, it's been associated with the city of Cádiz in the Guadalquivir River, which has worked its way up towards Seville. And then nowadays, people have been focusing on Huelva, which is a little bit further to the west, and a lot of investigation is being done there. And more recently, further north in the region of Extremadura. For years, this civilization called Tartessos was shrouded in mystery. Mystery because they didn't really know where it was. Mystery because they didn't really know who the Tartessians were. Mystery because they didn't really know if it had ever existed, at least as a major civilization. And that's where the mythological part of this tradition comes into play. Interest in Tartessos spawned from a German historian named Adolf Schulten, and he brought it to the world's attention. Schulten was passionate about early pre-Roman and Roman Spain and devoted much of his life to numerous important projects such as Numancia in Soria and Tarraco in Tarragona in Catalonia. Tartessos has always been considered his great challenge and nemesis at the same time, as we will see a little bit later on. He published a book in the 20s unveiling the mystery, and because so little was known about it, fantasy sort of took over, and all sorts of theories sort of popped up. Theories such as this was in reality the lost civilization of Atlantis, or maybe a city founded by the survivors of Atlantis. Actually, the fact that Tartessos, or at least part of this civilization, may have been wiped out by a tsunami, it sort of gave credence to that idea. And then some also said that it was possibly a mysterious biblical place called Tarshish. And there was also a group that said they were a civilization created by aliens. What mystery is complete without our friends from outer space? Anyway, Shelton spent a great deal of his career to the discovery of this elusive city. It was almost an obsession. You'd think he was sort of trying to find his own Troy. But unfortunately for him, he never found it. He never had sort of that aha discovery. But what he did achieve was spark interest in the subject. And as a result, experts over the decades have been searching assiduously and coming up with some surprising results. For many years, they were frustrated, just like Schulten, because they couldn't find that golden metropolis. But there may be a reason for that. No major city has ever been found, and that may be for one of two reasons. One, they haven't found it yet. Or two, it doesn't exist. Experts today are starting to lean toward that second theory. But the civilization of Tartessos, in one form or another, almost definitely did. Archaeology, from the past few decades, has made great strides in shedding light on the subject, and scholars have managed to piece together a narrative that seems both plausible and convincing. The prevailing version is that in that area, there was a late Bronze Age people who came into contact with the Phoenicians, who contributed many cultural benefits as well as technical expertise and know-how that the rest of the Iberian tribes lacked. As a result, this culture was able to develop and become a more sophisticated society. They also had more sophisticated mining methods, which allowed them to supply the Phoenicians and the Greeks, their main trading partners, with what they were looking for, which was precious metals. The newly found wealth led to an increase in power and territory and prestige. Its most famous ruler, which was actually probably a dynasty, was known as Arganthonius, which many scholars seem to link to the Latin word for silver. Recent findings of sophisticated necropolises, sanctuaries, and fortresses seem to strengthen the theory that there existed an advanced culture in those parts between the 7th and 5th centuries BCE. When the Phoenician city of Tyre fell on the other side of the Mediterranean, their most successful colony, Carthage, took over, and with the assistance of the Etruscans in Italy, they basically muscled the Greeks out. Carthage then took over in southern Spain and, for whatever reason, didn't seem interested in interacting with Tartessos, and the micro-civilization collapsed rather quickly. And that seems to be the most likely scenario. Anyway, they say that the Tartessians sort of developed into another group often associated with the Iberians known as the Turdetani. As we were saying before, this is a developing story and it will be updated as we learn more. The Vascones, or the early Basques. If we haven't had enough mysteries to contend with during this period, we can always mix in the Basques to further confuse things. The Basque country, also called Euskadi, is the granddaddy of them all. The controversy over the origins of the Basque has been mixed in on occasion with politics. Some of those who are particularly pro-independence, very pro-Basque, prefer theories that make them as unique as possible, and they tend to reject other ideas that would seem to include them with the rest of the peoples from Europe. One thing is perfectly clear, though, there is something about the Basques that sets them apart from others. And it's been like that for a very long time. Take their language, for example. No matter how much research has been done on it, and we are talking enough to fill a library, no convincing explanation has been accepted as to the origin of the language. There are a lot of theories, but no conclusions. Other than that, we don't know for sure. Essentially, it's like no other. Some feel it was developed independently in the very place where the Basques have been living for thousands of years. Others compare it to old Iberian languages, like Aquitanian, but nothing definitive has been found there. And then there are some people who have noticed a certain resemblance with Caucasian languages on the other side of Europe. But one thing is for sure, it is not Indo-European. It is probably pre-Indo-European. And the same goes for that group of people, the Vascones themselves. Where did they come from? Who were they? Once again, we can find a whole slew of theories being batted around, but it's not easy to determine. For a while there, most scholars centered around three. There was the native theory that says they were sort of always there. Maybe they sort of survived the ice age and had been isolated on during the ice age. Then others say they were related to the pre-Indo-European Iberians. And then there's another theory that says they, was it like the language, they came from the Caucasians. Since the advent of genetics, there have been more studies with lots of results which haven't entirely solved the mystery, but probably have helped us a little bit more. There have been some conflicting conclusions with a relationship saying that they had a relationship to the Celts, like in Ireland, Britain, and Wales, and other results saying that they aren't really any different from most people in Western Europe. A 2015 finding suggests that they are descendants of Neolithic farmers from Iberia, who probably arrived from Turkey, and then later on they would mix with migrant groups of hunter-gatherers. More recently, in 2019, a study revealed that they were most likely an Iron Age population that went for a long, long time without barely mixing with peoples from nearby lands. How that is possible isn't exactly clear, since this is a part of Europe, in fact, a part of Spain, that would naturally experience the influx and passing through of many different peoples, and it seems complicated that they would be able to stay so isolated throughout those centuries, if not thousands of years. In any event, it's a mess, I tell you, and I hesitate to present any one theory without adding a big beware, we're not sure. They just don't know for sure, and I think the best thing to do is to wait it out until a more definitive conclusion is made. But it makes for exciting intellectual debate. The Vascones and other proto-Basque tribes are just another part of this fascinating mesh of cultures in pre-Roman Spain. We could go on and on and on. There are more nuances regarding different peoples living on the Iberian Peninsula before the arrival of the Romans. But I think we've had enough for the moment. To sum up, so far we've looked at the presence of the Celts and the Iberians during this period. We've also taken a look at the legendary Tartessos and the early Basques. And now we are going to move on in the next episode to looking more closely at the different cultures that came and influenced these people, namely the Greeks and the Phoenicians, and later the Carthaginians and the Romans. So that will be all for today. We hope you've enjoyed today's podcast from Brian's Spain Domain. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them with us. We love the feedback. And a reminder that you can follow us on Spotify and Castos, or if you wish to support us, check us out on Patreon. Stay safe and well, and hasta pronto.